This is 0022, the Stuff File Program, with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Yes, this is indeed the Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, number 0022. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, we'll meet Michael Bowden, who runs the Cockroach Hall of Fame and Museum. They dress up cockroaches and place them in poses, like Liberace.
This was done by an elderly lady, and it's a cockroach at a table. And a piano, and it's playing the piano, and music actually comes out of the piano. So people really had fun. It's strange, but when people are normally terrified of cockroaches, but when you start dressing them up, they love it.
We'll meet Jeff Deck, the co-author of The Great Typo Hunt. He drove across America to correct the punctuation on signs.
It definitely started off with typos just driving me nuts as something that I had always noticed growing up and as part of the actual driving force for setting out on the trip. It wasn't really so much that they made me angry or despairing about society at large. It was just more that I saw it as a problem that needed fixing, and that a problem that I, like, with my actual background, could potentially fix.
There's Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation.
Today's show, 33% off. What a deal! Maybe it's not. Hi, this is Steve Walsh. You know, your guy in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. You're going to want to stick around for my two-minute tirade. It's coming up later on, right here on the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And, of course, we have lots and lots and lots of stuff. The guests later on this edition of the Stuff File Program, the person who told you this was program number 0022, that would be Dylan Black from Virgin Radio in Ottawa, 106.9. In addition to being on the radio, he's also a huge supporter of many charities, including the Children's Hospital of Eastern Ontario, the Children's Wish Foundation, and the University of Ottawa Heart Institute, just to name a few. He also strongly believes in donating blood and urges that you make an appointment today by calling 888-2-DONATE. That's 888-2-DONATE. And thank you very much, Dylan, for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File Program. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? We start off with a story from England. It's actually a survey. Apparently, car alarms are the single most annoying piece of technology ever created. At least that's according to a new survey by PhonePiggyBank.com. Turns out the screeching sirens, which always tend to go off in the middle of the night, are the number one most irritating tech gadget ever made. Following the car alarm is the dreaded timer that appears on the computer screen as information is loading. Other irritating banes of people's existence that are more frustrating than helpful include speeding cameras at traffic stops, automated phone systems, novelty doorbells, the bong sound in Windows when you can't do something on the computer, out-of-service email replies, uncomfortable headphones, and alarm clocks. Brits get annoyed by technology at least four times a day, with the typical angry rant lasting 6 minutes. Two-thirds hate the fact that they simply can't live without their infuriating technology. So, there you go. Okay, still with the UK, a 57-year-old great-grandmother in the UK has spent nearly $16,000 trying to look exactly like Jessica Rabbit from the movie Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Annette Edwards has undergone several procedures, including a breast lift, brow lift, chin implants, and Botox injections. To get the cartoon's bod, she even diets like a rabbit, eating only salads and cereals. I'd call this woman a freak of nature, except nature has nothing to do with this.
You've got me all wrong. You don't know how hard it is being a woman looking the way I do. I'm not bad. I'm just drawn that way.
That's my whole point. She's drawn. You're supposedly real. At least you were. Anyway, moving right along. Natives of the Aramango section of the Pacific island Vanuatu recently held a formal conciliation with the great-great-grandson of the British missionary whom the islanders' ancestors ate when he came ashore in 1839. Charles Milner Williams's forebearer, who was Reverend John Williams, was regarded as the most famous Christian missionary of the era. Vanuatan legislator Ralph Reginvanu told BBC News that cannibalism was traditionally a sacred warrior practice for vanquishing a threat and absorbing the power of the enemy. Nonetheless, he said the island has long felt guilt and even a complex from killing and eating Reverend Williams. In penitence, Vanuatu symbolically gave the Williams family a 7-year-old girl who will not be eaten, but whose education Milner Williams promised to underwrite. There you go. Didn't mention if Williams was tasty back then or not. I don't know if that was in the court records or if in the history books or something, but we'll just go on the assumption that he probably was. Moving right along, Brian Wallace was the victim of a severe beating in Belfast, Northern Ireland in 2007, stabbed 5 times and hospitalized with lung and kidney lacerations, and to this day is battling a £7,500 or $12,000 compensation from the government fund. Now, this story, by the way, is under the headline of It's Good to Be a British Criminal, so you know where this is going. In December of last year, 2009, Wallace learned that his attacker, Simon Granhoff, who had been mistakenly kept in jail 2 weeks longer than his sentence, would receive £12,500 or $20,000 from the government for deprivation of rights. And by the way, Granhoff's sentence had already been cut in half before the mistake. Wow, it's better to be the criminal, apparently, than the victim. Okay, under the headline of Alcohol Was Involved, a couple of stories for you. In November, the Seattle Police Department, investigating a complaint about a beating, interviewed a 25-year-old man hospitalized after being found screaming in pain, impaled on a metal fence. He said he had run away from a barroom fight and momentarily thought he was a ninja warrior capable of leaping the fence. Well, apparently, he was wrong. Meanwhile, Sean McDowell, age 24, was arrested in Ashland, Oregon, after attempting to steal a 4-foot-tall stuffed giraffe from the front of a children's store. A police officer had witnessed an inebriated McDowell grab the giraffe and make simulated sexual movements, then walk away, and then return 90 minutes later to snatch the animal for good. Hot date? Okay, Jorge Niebla is currently serving 13 life sentences for kidnapping and armed robbery in Florida, and he's passing his time constructively by suing Penthouse Magazine because they refuse to send a subscription to anyone behind bars. Jorge says Penthouse is being prejudicial and not respecting his basic rights. Penthouse has refused to comment, and you'll love this. A judge has ordered Jorge to fill out a form to get a waiver for the $350 filing fee. So not only are we going to waste taxpayers' money on this lunacy, we're not even going to collect his filing fee. Sometimes it's better to be the crook than the victim. And finally, in this section of the Stuff File stories, it's weird to go jogging in 25-degree Fahrenheit weather. Even more so to be jogging in 25-degree Fahrenheit weather while completely naked. But if you really want a first-class ticket straight to the funny farm, do all of that right in front of the White House during rush hour. Thus was the scene at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue until Secret Service and D.C. police officers chased the man after he refused to stop. And the naked jog created another issue for authorities. He had apparently stripped down in front of his car a few blocks away and put all of his clothes in a paper bag that had been left unattended, meaning it had to be classified as a suspicious package. The Secret Service cordoned off the area and investigated the bag, and after determining it only contained the man's cast-off garments, cleared the scene. Our naked jogging friend is in Secret Service custody, but has not yet been charged. There you go. Lovely. Simply lovely. And chilly. And I'm sure a lot of shrinkage was involved. Anyway, On to our first guest on the Stuff File for this edition of the program. You know, some people kill cockroaches, but one man kills and plays dress-up with them. Michael Bodan, an exterminator in Plano, Texas, has a strange love-hate relationship with the cockroaches he's hired to kill. Michael is on the line with us right now. Hi, Michael.
Hi, thanks for calling.
Thanks for being on the program with us.
Well, so, we're going to have some fun. I mean, it's, you know, it's funny. I'm a professional exterminator, but I've always kind of been a little weirdo. My ex-wife called me eccentric, and I guess anybody that has a cockroach museum must be a little eccentric.
Well, I was about to say, you do have this cockroach museum, and I've even seen the piece on YouTube about your cockroach museum, and how did this get started, especially considering you were initially a person hired to kill these things?
Well, I tell you what, about 20 years ago, I did a promotion where I made a wanted dead or alive poster, and I offered $1,000 for Dallas's largest cockroach. And the media picked up on it, CNN picked up on it, and pretty soon I was doing interviews around the world. Well, it got a lot of publicity for my store, and people started bringing their cockroaches. And we even had a limo driver bring in the cockroach for someone that didn't want to be known that they were trying to get $1,000. So we finally, after 30 days in August, we measured the cockroach. And there was about 45 cockroaches brought in. And the largest one was 1.88 inches. And we paid $1,000 to three girls at Southwestern Bell. Well, a week later, I get a call from NBC. And the Johnny Carson show wanted me to appear with that cockroach on the show. So I jumped on the plane, went out to Burbank, and I was a guest on a Friday night. His audience was 20 million people at that time. And Ed McMahon said, Michael, this show's going to change your life. I didn't think anything of it. And I came back to Dallas, and I had 10 job offers to be spokesperson for chemical companies. So I went to work for American Cyanamid, who made a cockroach product. And I had a 5-year contract, and the last 2 years of the contract, I traveled the globe judging contests for the best dressed cockroach in New York and Miami. And when the promotion was done, they were going to throw them away, and I said, heck no, I'm going to make a museum. They gave them to me, and that's how it started.
Now, I understand in your museum you have such cockroaches. For instance, you have Liberace, which of course is...
Liberace, and it actually plays the piano. This was done by an elderly lady, and it's a cockroach at a table, and a piano, I mean, and it's playing the piano, and music actually comes out of the piano. So people really had fun. It's strange, but when people are normally terrified of cockroaches, but when you start dressing them up, they love it.
Well, the same can be said about humans.
That's true. I'm sorry.
What are some of the other themed cockroaches you have at the museum?
Well, I'm looking at them right now. We have the Bates Motel roach, and the guy called it the Combates Motel because the sponsor at that time was Combat. Then we have Boys at the Beach. It's roaches with sunglasses laying on the beach getting a tan, and one on a surfing, sun surfer thing. And then we have Ross Perroach. That's kind of funny. Post-NAFTA, and it's a cockroach with Ross Perot's face on it. And then we have Marilyn Monroe. We have Batman Roach. People really had fun with this. And lately, people have been coming from different parts of the country. It's amazing how the Internet can make a little micro museum like this infamous.
Well, just how big is your museum?
How about 200 square feet? It's pretty small. It's only good for about 10, 15 minutes. People say, Michael, how much does it cost to come in? And I say, well, let's put it this way. I have a donation box if you want to help out, but otherwise no one's going to charge you to look at dead cockroaches. Are you serious?
have you thought of taking your cockroach museum, since it's relatively small, have you thought of taking it on the road?
Not really, because I'm a one-man band here in Texas. So in the morning, I go out and I treat people's homes. Then in the afternoon, the museum is housed in our do-it-yourself pest control supply store. So I don't have the time to get out of town. It's lucky if I'm able to go to Hollywood or New York to do a movie or do a TV show. But for that, I'll close the place up.
Admittedly, no one really likes to have a cockroach in their house, and we always make cockroach jokes about the fact that they'll be the only thing around after Armageddon. But there's something to be said about a creature that has basically withstood just about everything the elements and mankind has been able to throw at it.
You are so right. You know, cockroaches have been around for 350 million years. They were around before the dinosaurs, and they're going to last a lot longer than we're going to be around here. And they're just tenacious, and I kind of look up to them. I look at a cockroach, and I have this large, big vat. It's a tub, plastic tub, and I have about 250 large Madagascar hissing cockroaches. And sometimes when I'm bored and I don't have anything else to do, I'll sit in a chair and I just listen, and I watch them and watch the interreaction, and they hiss and they talk. And I figure, my gosh, any insect that has been able to last this long, maybe we can learn something from them. So sometimes I'm accused of being a cockroach, a six-foot cockroach.
I'm just wondering, with the admiration that you have for these creatures, is there ever any concern that you might have some sort of Stockholm syndrome and that you won't be able to do your job and kill them during the day?
Hey, when there's a cockroach in front of my spray rig, they're dead. But when they're here at the store... So the latest one, you know, most of these were all done by people, but lately I've been working on some myself. So the one latest one that I've been working on is the Ellen DeGeneres cockroach. And since she likes to dance, I'm dressing up this cockroach with her face and arms, and we're putting it on a little, like a music box, and it's going to turn around and it'll be dancing. So we'll have a dancing Ellen DeGeneres cockroach.
Now, are you planning to make Ellen aware of this cockroach?
Probably once it gets done, and I'm hoping that, you know what, I'll be on a plane to L.A.
People can take a look at the Cockroach Museum. They can see the website. The website is www.pestshop.com, correct?
Correct. There's a YouTube hyperlink, and if they have any questions about cockroaches, shoot away.
Excellent. So the website again is www.pestshop.com. Michael, I thank you very, very much for being on the program with us.
Well, I really appreciate it. By the way, do you guys have cockroaches up there?
Is there a part of the world that doesn't?
Well, probably I would think Alaska. They might have some small ones, a little German cockroach, but normally, you know, the warmer the weather, the more prevalent. But really, cockroaches are worldwide.
I'm sure Sarah Palin will take care of those.
That's right.
Thank you very much, Michael, for being on the program with us.
You're welcome. The only good roach is a dead roach.
Michael Bodan, who runs the Cockroach Hall of Fame and Museum in Plano, Texas. Again, you can check out the website at www.pestshop.com. That's www.pestshop.com. You can also find the links to his site by going to mine, which is thestufffile.com. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
What are they saying about If the Rains Don't Cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Avidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother. Informed or entertained? Hey, you're doing both. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll touch base with Jeff Deck, the co-author of The Great Typo Hunt. Also, Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Of course, we have an idiot of the day, and there's lots more stuff, because this is indeed The Stuff File program. We take you to Evans, Colorado. Police there say 33-year-old Raul Gosin Valenzuela accompanied a friend with the intent of breaking into the home of the friend's ex-wife and then beating up her new boyfriend. But the plan kind of went bust when the two men gained access to the home, then ran right into Raul's own children, ages 8 and 11. Police say he didn't realize the woman who lived there was babysitting his kids, who quickly recognized their dad even though his face was covered with a bandana. No one was hurt in the break-in, but Raul was arrested on suspicion of second-degree burglary and other charges. The friend who got him mixed up into this whole chaos in the first place fled the scene before police arrived and hasn't been seen or heard from since. Nice pal. Okay, in Espanola Valley, New Mexico, the DeVargas Funeral Home and Crematory is being sued big time by the family they sent a most unfortunate package to. I warn you, this story is a little gooey. The family's grandmother had died, and the body was being prepared and cared for by the funeral home. They later gave the family a bag with grandma's personal effects inside. The bag had been left inside a family member's truck overnight, and when family members opened it, they noticed a foul odor coming from the bag. That's because along with Grandma's personal things, there was also a plastic bag labeled brain, which indeed had Grandma's brain inside. The brain has since been buried with the woman's body. Ooh. Can you just smell that lawsuit? Latin, the frying brain, but can you just smell that lawsuit? Okay, on to other body parts. We go to Southampton, England. British firefighters called to a hospital said they spent 30 minutes using a metal grinder to free a man's penis from a steel pipe. The Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service crew said they were called to England's Southampton General Hospital to use the 4.5-inch grinder to cut through the pipe without damaging the man's sex organ. Hospital staff said they were unable to remove the pipe without assistance because the blood flow in the man's penis had become restricted and caused him to become aroused. Doctors said the man's penis was bruised and swollen after the operation, but he did not suffer any serious or permanent injuries, unless you count immense embarrassment. Firefighters said the man declined to explain how his penis had become stuck in the pipe, although I think we can kind of guess. It was a very delicate operation that required a very steady hand, and the crew was worried about things getting too hot during the cutting, a fire and rescue spokesperson said. It's certainly an unusual call-out, and I'm sure the man won't be getting into that situation again. Well, I guess some women are right. There are some guys out there who will stick that thing anywhere that they can. And moving right along, we go to Port Orange, Florida. A 91-year-old man who crashed his car into a popular Florida restaurant proceeded to sit down and order breakfast near his vehicle. Tanya Gilardi, a spokeswoman for the Port Orange Fire, said Charles Pierce was not injured when he crashed his car into the Biscuits and Gravy restaurant, but another customer was treated for minor injuries at Halifax Health Medical Center in Port Orange. A firefighter told me he sat down and ordered breakfast right after the crash, Gilardi said of Pierce. He sat close to where the crash occurred so he could keep an eye on his car. Yeah, like that was suddenly going somewhere. Anyway, Port Orange Assistant Police Chief Wayne Miller said Pierce was attempting to park at the restaurant when he pressed the accelerator one too many times and the vehicle slammed through the glass window of the cafe. Pierce was issued a citation for careless driving. This was a story in Florida. It involved a driver who was 91. This is pretty much a common story in Florida. Yes. Anyway, on to our next guest here on The Stuff File with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Two U.S. men convicted on federal vandalism charges for fixing typos on public signs said they have landed a book deal to write about their adventures. Benjamin Herson of Oregon and Jeff Deck of Massachusetts said they were given a $150,000 advance to write The Great Typo Hunt, which is due out next August. The men were sentenced to probation and ordered to stay out of national parks for a year for correcting the grammar on a 70-year-old sign at the Grand Canyon South Rim during their 2008 cross-country typo trek. It was during that trek that we first caught up with Jeff Deck on our old radio show, and Jeff joins us right now here on The Stuff File. Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Good. Good to talk to you again.
Nice to talk to you as well. Did you have any idea when you started doing this, and we spoke to you 2 years ago, that a book deal would be coming down the road, and also the fact that you'd be convicted of federal vandalism charges?
There were a few adventures in there that I have to admit I did not foresee.
Now, when we spoke to you, as I said, you were going around correcting typos, and we hadn't touched base, although I kept mentioning your story as it unfolded over the last little while. So who caught you in Grand Canyon, and what was that process like? Did they treat you civilly? Were they nice, or did they just see you guys as being a nuisance?
Well, I think it's good that you asked that, because the condensed version of the story that that you cited at the beginning could certainly paint us in the wrong way, and it'd be great if I could clear it up just a little bit. we didn't get arrested at the Grand Canyon. Like, we didn't have a ranger come up to us and yank white out of our hands and take us away in irons. Although I admit that makes for a more powerful image. as part of our typo hunt across the country, fixing typos and signs wherever we saw them, we made an ill-advised decision at the Grand Canyon to fix a particular sign without permission, a sign that didn't really look like anything special, and that we thought nobody would really notice or mind if we just went ahead and fixed a couple of punctuational issues ourselves, and that turned out to be a miscalculation.
So, were you in front of a court at some point?
We were, yeah. We finished the typo hunt. It was about 2.5 months, and that Grand Canyon visit was somewhere in the middle there. It was late March of 2008, and when we returned to my apartment in Somerville in mid-May 2008, a few days after we got back, the Park Service showed up with a court summons for us to fly out to federal court in Arizona.
Okay, so to reiterate for those who might not have followed the story when we were on the radio or followed along in the news, you guys formed this organization called TEAL, T-E-A-L, which is the Typo Eradication Advancement League. You go around fixing punctuation on signs that are in the general public, correct?
Yep, that's correct.
And as I said in the beginning, did you ever anticipate that this would somehow turn into a book deal, and how surprised were you when I guess it's the publisher came to you and said, "We want you to write a book."
We'd heard from some folks in publishing during the actual trip and for a little bit afterwards, and so I think it's it was a little bit inaccurate, as it was reported, to say that that like the publisher saw news of our Grand Canyon court appearance and thought that that would be the impetus for us to write a book. We had actually already been talking with a bunch of folks about doing a book about the whole journey. And that was what ultimately appeared. The Grand Canyon incident was is in the book, but uh, is is no more than 10% of the actual content. It's mostly about the whole trip.
Well, you know, the pressure is now on because the book comes out in August, and there's one thing you can't afford to have in the book, and that's a typo.
That's true, and believe me, we've been scouring over it over and over again, and pulling in every extra pair of eyes that we can to make sure there's nothing in there, because we know that if there's something lurking in there, we'll hear about it.
Now, how anal retentive are you about the whole typo situation? Are you thinking that part of the problem is, as a society, we are slipping in the way we use the language? Or are you trying to make another point, or do typos just drive you nuts? What is it?
Well, it definitely started off with typos just driving me nuts. I mean, as something that I had always noticed growing up, and as part of the actual driving force for setting out on the trip, it wasn't really so much that they made me like angry or despairing about society at large. It was just more that I saw it as a problem that needed fixing, and that a problem that I, like, with my actual background, could potentially fix.
And your background is?
I've worked as an editor in a few different positions, so I've always had that eye for spotting mistakes and weeding them out.
Is there a part of the country, since you traveled around correcting mistakes, is there a part of the country that's more prone to typos than others?
You know, some people thought that would be the case at the beginning. They would tell me about particular regions that they expected that we would be rolling in typos. And as we found out, after going through the whole trip and looking at the whole picture, it really typos can crop up everywhere, and did crop up everywhere. And it was actually less about what region you were in and more about the type of neighborhood that you were in a given place. Whether it was a neighborhood with more like independent businesses versus like a place with a lot of chain stores.
So it's
like the chain stores would be getting their signs from like the corporate offices, so they'd be less likely to have mistakes.
So what happens, Jeff, when you make a mistake? Because, you know, we all do.
Oh, I don't know that I do. No, I yeah, I mean, everyone makes mistakes, and when I set out on the mission in the first place, I tried to make that one of Thiel's founding principles, that everyone does make mistakes, and that we would be going after the mistakes rather than the people who made them.
Because, there are a lot of people who are online nowadays, of course, things like Facebook, and I myself am a writer, and I'm a journalist, I'm a broadcaster, so I spend a lot of time writing. I know how to write. And in my haste in writing a message sometime not long ago, I used the wrong its. Now, I can tell the difference between ITS and IT apostrophe S, but I used the wrong one. And someone who works in a newspaper jumped up and down about this, and it's like, really? I know. You know, I made a mistake. Let it go.
Was it like a personal message, like an email or something?
Yeah. Well, it was a. You know how you do a, I guess, a status line, in Facebook. So it was in my status line. So somebody responded. So that everyone who responded to this will now know the mistake, because this person needed to point it out. It's like, really, was that important?
Yeah, I definitely draw a distinct line between stuff that's put out for the public to see and more personal communication, because it's a pretty quick way to ruin friendships if you go after people for what they've been writing to you in Facebook or through email or something like that.
So the book is coming out in August. In the meantime, besides drawing a lot of attention from media and also the law, what has the trip done for you? What have you learned about either America or the judicial system in your pursuit of correcting grammar?
Well, you know, I'll save the real juicy conclusions for the book, but the trip really was eye-opening in that there were a lot of larger issues that the typos did lead us to, and just some, I think one of the most important things that we came away from the trip with is that there really could be some improvements in the way spelling and grammar are actually taught. We discovered that that really some of the errors could have in fact been avoided with some better early education in phonics. And so we're trying to do what we can to help have that more integrated in education.
I guess the bigger question too is, or the bigger answer is, the fact that people are making mistakes on signs, making a mistake in public writing, mm-hmm. and it's not an error in judgment. They don't know they've made the mistake. That's the bigger problem.
Well, yeah, we realized during the trip that the typos fell into two different camps, and it wasn't always easy to distinguish which camp they were in. One was carelessness, and one was actual insufficient education. And so to be kind, we just have to assume sometimes there, you know, if we're interacting directly with a sign owner, we just have to assume that they had made it out of carelessness rather than actually not knowing what it was supposed to be. But both kinds of errors popped up a lot. So,
well, we look forward to when the book comes out in August. The book is called The Great Typo Hunt. You and Benjamin Herson have put this together. I thank you, Jeff Deck, for being on the program with us once again.
Yeah, it's great to talk with you again, Peter.
Jeff Deck, who will be one of the co-authors of The Great Typo Hunt. You can also check out their website, which is www.greattypohunt.com. It's part of TEAL, or the Typo Eradication Advancement League. And, of course, you can find the link to their website by going to my website, which is thestufffile.com. This is the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation, is coming up in just a matter of moments.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, Peter Anthony Holder once again brings you Steve Walsh, our man in the heart of America, checking the pulse of the nation. Lock up your daughters. And in West Virginia, your sheep. Joining Peter Anthony Holder is our intrepid embedded reporter, deep in the heartland of the U.S. of A., Stephen S. Walsh.
How you doing, Steve Arino?
Gosh, I'm telling you, we've come out of the deep freeze, Peter. We are out of the deep freeze. I'm happy. I'm cheerful.
Oh, I have to stop right there and say, by the way, you sent me some pictures where you had snow.
yeah.
And I'm sorry, but the pictures you sent me with the snow outside your house, I've seen more frosting on cornflakes. Okay.
No, it was snow.
Yeah, right. Right.
I swear it was snow.
Yeah, okay. Paralyzing, was it?
Okay, fine. Go ahead. Belittle me if you must. I hate you Canadians. Jeez.
You were one of us at one time.
Yes.
And okay, by the way...
You know why I left?
Why?
I didn't like snow!
By the way, you have dual citizenship, so no matter how hard you try, you're still one of us.
Okay, fine. Be that way if you must.
Anyway, sir.
Yes?
What do you have for us this week?
Oh, let's see. Dateline, Kansas City, Missouri.
That'd be the Show Me State.
I live here in the Show Me State. You know?
Yes, I know.
I know. Surveillance video from a downtown McDonald's restaurant in Kansas City shows a woman experiencing hamburger rage. The incident happened on December 27th, and the video clearly shows a woman demanding a refund for what she claimed was an inferior hamburger. Hey, who hasn't had one of those? After being denied the refund, the video shows her throwing a bucket of water over the counter along with other items, including a basket of straws, cookies, a sign, and even three of the cash registers. Hard to believe, I know. The incident played out in front of several unsuspecting customers, including kids, I might add. The woman was gone before the police arrived. They're asking anyone who can identify the woman to call the tips hotline. See, this is just wrong, all right?
Well, where at McDonald's do you get a bucket of water?
Well, I think what it was one of those big glasses, you know, the big gulp or whatever the heck they call it?
Yeah, yeah.
And she filled it up with the water from the machine where they let you do it yourself.
Ah, okay.
Which is clearly a reason not to let people do it themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Bad people.
Yeah.
Bad people, I'm telling you. I'm just saying, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's move on. Dateline, Zwingo, Iowa.
Zwingle?
I know. I couldn't make up this stuff, okay?
That'd be the Hawkeye State. Where the heck is Zwingle?
Sure would, yeah, the Zwingle State. You could call it the perfect birthday present, or not. You might even say Dick Kleiss done good when he got his wife, Carol, a birthday gift. Carol and Dick Kleiss live on a farm in eastern Iowa. This year, for her birthday, Dick used more than 120,000 pounds of manure to spell out a special message. It basically said, happy birthday, love you, but in shorthand. And it only took 3 hours to spell it all out in a stinky but mushy way. It's not hard, said Kleiss. Any manure will work, but the good, soft, gushy, warm stuff works the best. It kind of melts the snow. Carol says Dick's birthday is in May, and she's already thinking of ways to beat out his gift. I don't think you have to beat it out. I think good laxative will take care of things.
You know, all I can say is that's got to be true love, because if she's enamored by sign and
like
dung,
well, hey, look,
they'll be together forever.
Apparently, he was feeding her a lot of crap.
They'll be together forever.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
All right. Dateline, Murfreesboro, Tennessee.
That'd be the Volunteer State.
It used to be the capital before Nashville.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
Yeah, back in the 1830s, I guess. Anyway, police say a driver passed out in his car at a Tennessee gas station while a batch of methamphetamine was cooking in the back seat. An employee of the gas station in Murfreesboro, which is about 30 miles southeast of Nashville, called police because the car was sitting at a pump for about an hour on New Year's Day. Police say a chemical process to make the drug was in progress. Some meth-making ingredients can be explosive, as we all know. 31-year-old Nathan Beasley is charged with driving under the influence, driving on a suspended license, reckless endangerment, and manufacturing meth.
Wait a minute. One of the most highly flammable products that any idiot can make, and usually it is an idiot who makes it, was doing this beside a gas pump?
That is correct.
Wow.
Not very bright, huh?
Oh, gosh, not even close.
I know. I'm just passing it along. Okay? That's all I can do.
If I owned that gas station, that would make me mad, but I think anger comes later.
I'm not getting angry right now.
Okay.
I'm going to hold off if that's okay with you.
Okay, hold off.
Okay. Dateline, Fairfax, Ohio.
Oh, no, Ohio. I can hardly wait to say goodbye, oh.
There's that song. It's the Buckeye State.
Yeah, I used to live there, you know.
I remember. You hated it.
I hated it. The only thing I liked there was watching the lights change. What's that one between red and green?
Amber.
Right. Anyway, 52-year-old Roger C. Wynn must be just dying, I tell you, to get on that popular website, peopleofwalmart.com.
Oh, by the way, I've checked that website.
You did?
It's they're weird.
Yeah, well, it's people who are proud of being people of Walmart.
Yeah, or caught in Walmart.
I've done that. I've caught people at Walmart. It's like people who swear they never go there, and I don't care what people, you know, you see me walking around in the wall, I don't care.
Yeah.
And I walk in, and I see people, hey, hi, how are you? And it's like you just caught somebody cheating on his wife, right? hi, how you doing? Hey, what's up? Hi. You know, they don't know what to say. They're all nervous.
Yeah.
Gosh, got caught in Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
There are worse things you can get caught doing, you know? I'm just telling you.
Yeah.
Anyway, after all, police say this This person stole a 12-pack of beer at Walmart, drank it as he walked through the store, a 12-pack, I might add, shouted profanities at customers, and for a grand finale, threatened to kill a Fairfax police officer. He now faces charges of theft, aggravated menacing, and disorderly conduct while intoxicated. While being arrested, Wynn allegedly threatened to blow off the arresting officer's head and continued his disorderly behavior and urinated several times in the police interview room at the station. Oh, that's just wrong, okay?
On so many levels.
It really is. I would not do that, and I wouldn't tolerate that. In fact, Peter.
Yes.
If somebody had done that,
yes,
and I were the officer in charge,
yes,
oh, I'd be so angry.
Uh-huh. How angry?
Even I might resort to something that would be out of the ordinary for me. But then I'd settle down and probably do what I do best when I get angry. I take keyboard in hand and write a two-minute tirade.
Uh-huh.
And I've done that right now, if I may.
Tirade away.
Thank you very much, Peter. It is my two-minute tirade, of course. And this time, I want to rant about getting 33% off, or save $5. I know what you're thinking. 33% off the regular price of, well, just about anything is a pretty good deal, right? Not necessarily. Like many people who are listening to this segment right now, I get flyers and circulars in my mailbox advertising certain products or services, and maybe a coupon or two to encourage me to purchase that product or service. Sometimes the coupon or the ad informs me that something can be purchased for $20, down $5 from the regular price. Now, that's good information, because it tells me how much it's going to cost me and how much I'm saving. But that's not always the case. I have one in front of me right now. In fact, I'll hold it up to the phone, take a look. It's offering me an oil change for 33% off. Wow, 33% off. That's a third off the regular price. Is this a great deal or what? Well, let's put it this way. If the regular price of an oil change is $20, then 33% off is a great deal because I can get it for between $13 and $14. But if the regular price is, I don't know, $45, then 33% off brings the price down to $30. That's certainly a substantial savings, but it's not as good a deal as an oil change at the regular price of $20. You see, sometimes a deal really isn't so great. So, when I see a coupon or a flyer advertising a third off the regular price with no mention of the regular price, I automatically assume that the regular price is far more expensive than another product or service at its regular price, and I just toss away the ad. Now, I realize there are a lot of stupid people who will buy anything if they're getting something off the regular price, but not me. If you're not giving me the bottom line with information on how much something is going to cost me, don't waste my time. I'll keep taking my car to the garage at Walmart.
And we always get Steve at full value on this program.
Yes, we certainly do. No 33% off.
There you go. Okay? But by the way,
no $5 savings.
Yes, and by the way, people can check out the website, which is at www.missourinet.com, and you could also see where Steve does a blog and vents his spleen online for all to read.
Yes, I do, and I have fun doing it too.
I know you do.
I do. It's the way I am.
Yes, of course. In the meantime, sir.
Yes.
Say those three magic words.
Hit the thief.
This is The Stuff File.
And we're almost done with this edition of The Stuff File program. We still have an idiot of the day and a couple of Stuff File stories to wrap things up. One story we call Freak of Nomenclature, and that is the narcotics division. Because, you know, sometimes people are named certain things, and their name is almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Well, here's one of those situations. After an 8-month investigation, undercover detectives in Darlington, Florida, arrested a couple allegedly responsible for the manufacture and distribution of a large supply of crystal meth in northwest Florida and southeast Alabama. Arrested were Jason Claiborne Hughes, age 40, and his girlfriend, Crystal Beth Williams, 21. Hughes called Crystal Beth uniquely qualified for their partnership. Now, come on. If you name your child Crystal Beth, you increase the chances she'll make crystal meth, and heaven forbid if that child develops a hare lip. Okay, moving right along. More than $2 million worth of counterfeit cigarettes filled with rabbit droppings instead of tobacco have been confiscated by customs officials in Spain. The fake cigarettes, due to be sold on the black market as famous brands, were discovered after British holidaymakers in the Canary Islands smelled a rat whenever they lit up. They stunk. They smell just as you'd imagine burning poo to smell, said one customs official in Tenerife. Police and customs staff arrested 12 smugglers in an undercover operation to intercept the cigarettes as they landed on a boat from China. They not only smell bad, but the toxic chemicals they gave off are pure poison, explained a customs official. Try not to end up at the Van Buren County Jail in Paw Paw, Michigan. One section of the jail is 100 years old and has no air conditioning. As a result, its barred windows are open during warm weather. As the wing stands only a few feet from the sidewalk, separated by a tall chain-link fence crowned by spirals of razor wire, for years, friends and loved ones of the inmates have been known to stand outside of the jail and shout out to them. Sometimes they hold entire conversations together. Not anymore. A new Paw Paw law, yeah, that's fun to say, makes giving your favorite inmate a shout-out from the sidewalk illegal. Do it, and you could have lots of conversations with them from inside the jail for 90 days. And in Erie, Pennsylvania, a man who was robbed of his jacket, cell phone, keys, and $300 in cash was left with a strange feeling that one of his two muggers looked awfully familiar. That would be because they went to school together about 15 years ago. Police arrested 30-year-old Anthony Williams after the victim pulled out some old yearbooks and figured out they both attended Central Career and Technical School in the mid-90s. I guess attending Central Career and Technical School doesn't necessarily guarantee one a lucrative and successful career. Meanwhile, police say Mark Weinberger, a plastic surgeon from Maryville, Indiana, talked patients into expensive surgical procedures and either did a bad job or just took the money and did nothing. The 46-year-old doctor then ran, even taking survival gear, so that he could hide in the wild, leaving behind hundreds of patients and insurance companies claiming fraud or malpractice, more than $5 million in debts, and his wife. Now, 5 years later, police in Italy found him hiding in a tent at 6,000 feet on Mont Blanc. After his arrest, Weinberger took out a hidden box cutter and slit his own throat, but missed all critical structures and survived. He is awaiting extradition to the United States. Let's see. A surgeon who's wanted for malpractice, and in trying to kill himself, he missed his own carotid artery and a jugular vein. Yeah. I'm pretty sure he's guilty in every case of malpractice. Okay, and with that, let's get to the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff off presents the idiot of the day.
As a robber stepped into a convenience store in Athens, Georgia, he pulled a sawed-off shotgun out of his coveralls. Well, he tried to anyway. It got caught up, and because he had already had his finger on the trigger, the weapon discharged, sending pellets tearing through his own leg. His partner, surveillance camera footage shows, grabbed the gun and ran, leaving Michael Anthony Randall Jr., age 19, bleeding. Randall's foot was so badly damaged by the blast that he will probably have to have it amputated, police said. It could have been worse. Criminals that dumb more typically shoot off their mouths, not their foot. Why would someone shoot off his own foot in the commission of a burglary? One reason, and one reason only. He's an idiot.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Hope you've enjoyed it. You can go to my website, and that would be at thestufffile.com, to find information and links on all the guests. You'll find it at the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding date and program number, and in this case, the program number is 0022. You could email me at peter@thestufffile.com. And you could also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/PA Holder and Twitter at twitter.com/PA Holder. We hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com and World FM New Zealand 88.5 FM. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. I'm your announcer, your name here. Oh, I'm sorry. This is Ben Patrick Johnson.
What am I being paid for this?
What? You're flipping kidding me. Okay, that's it. Turn off the microphone.